This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
I've thrown away my toys, even my drum and trains. I want to make some noise with real life aeroplanes.
So long ago, that little voice dominated the silver screen, curls and smiles that got America through the Depression. Shirley Temple's opening act rallied an entire nation. She went on to live for decades as a successful diplomat and one of the first public activists for vigilance against breast cancer. A remembrance of Shirley Temple Black this hour. Also, some Olympic highlights as Isaac Newton might see them. And after a look at the continual unrest in the Middle East, we'll find some folks who dare to laugh about it all. Hummus later this hour. It's not just for pita bread anymore. But we begin this hour with a story that represents a collision between the caution over intelligence gathering engendered in the wake of the Edward Snowden revelations, the growing power of pilotless drones as a weapon to strike terrorists anywhere in the world, and the involvement of American citizens in active plotting against the United States, or at least aggressively urging others to commit violence against U.S. civilians. Just after his reelection, the president seemed to have no clear answer to the question of whether the administration would use drone strikes against American citizens anywhere in the world, even on American soil. Then the president appeared to clarify things. He offered some policy guidelines in a speech last May.
Of course, the targeting of any American raises constitutional issues that are not present in other strikes, which is why my administration submitted information about Alaki to the Department of Justice months before Alaki was killed, and briefed the Congress before this strike as well. But the high threshold that we've set for taking lethal action applies to all potential terrorist targets, regardless of whether or not they are American citizens. This threshold respects the inherent dignity of every human life.
It's not known if that threshold the president was talking about there, proposed last May, would have applied to the targeted killing of American cleric Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen, also referred to by the president, along with two other Americans who have been killed abroad. But House Intelligence Committee Chairman Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers said this month that the administration has made it now more likely, not less likely, that a radicalized American would strike at the U.S. without fear of reprisals.
Today, individuals who would have been previously removed from the battlefield by U.S. counterterrorism operations for attacking or plotting to attack against U.S. interests remain free because of self-imposed red tape. While we're busy pondering more transparency, our intelligence professionals are left paralyzed because of the totally incoherent policy guidance. So let me be the first to say publicly, the President's May 2013 policy changes for the U.S. targeted strikes are an utter and complete failure, and they leave Americans' lives at risk. Those changes, while sounding nice in a speech, are today, right now, endangering the lives of Americans at home and our military overseas in a way that is frustrating to our allies and frustrating to those of us who engage in the oversight of our classified activities.
Again, that's Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. This collision of due process principles and preemptive security may be tested sooner rather than later. According to the Associated Press, the Obama administration has discovered the whereabouts of an American citizen member of al-Qaeda, someone who is plotting terrorist attacks from an undisclosed location, a country that prohibits the U.S. military from conducting actions on its soil. Should the president act swiftly, dispense with any notion of due process, and violate the sovereignty of another nation, as we have done with repeated drone attacks in Pakistan and the killing of Osama bin Laden, an American citizen? Should we do this in Osama bin Laden, of course, not an American citizen, but Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan, whose sovereignty was violated in that killing of Osama bin Laden. Should we do this in this undisclosed country? Joining us now, Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Karen, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me.
A lot of tensions between various principles here. Do you think, first of all, that the U.S. policy changes that were announced in 2013 are a complete failure and leave America vulnerable in any sense?
Well, the proof is in the pudding. Do Americans feel less safe? Has any attack against the United States happened? Have we had to use armed forces to deter such an attack? It's hard to talk in such theory and in some ways in fantasy. What President Obama has attempted to do is to impose the rule of law, both international and domestic, on lethal attacks via the use of drones. The same rhetoric that followed 9/11 immediately, security versus liberty, security versus the rule of law, persists to this day for reasons that you can understand, which is that it's better to do things behind closed doors. It's better to do things without any kind of oversight. It's easier, but it's not right, and it doesn't follow the rule of law. And that's what President Obama's dilemma is right now.
The drone attacks and the drone command structure seems to be all over the Pentagon and the CIA. Does that create a problem in enforcing anything like due process?
It can, but it doesn't have to. There are different authorities, different oversight mechanisms for both the CIA and the Pentagon, and that's really what's at issue here. Who gets to do what in what kind of covert way? But the real issue is, does the United States want to be using lethal drone strikes? And today the issue is against Americans. The real problem here is, can you use it outside active hostilities, which is what President Obama has argued for? But the other issue is, we're still in that gray space between war and crime. And the question of this kind of drone strike is it being used in place of what would normally be law enforcement? So we're in a number of gray areas here. They're all uncomfortable.
Well, one of the gray areas you just referred to there, I believe you said just a moment ago, outside of an active war space or war zone.
Active hostilities.
Active hostilities. Is there such a thing in a war on terror where people can be plotting anywhere and an argument can be made that hostility can be seen on a website?
Well, it depends on how you define it. Are we in the global war against terror, and is there a global battlefield the way the Bush administration argued and the way the Obama administration accepts but doesn't want to use that term? Many people would say we are, but we do not have – the United States does not have that specific authority, or at least I would argue they didn't. The authorization for the use of military force is limited, even though it's broad. It's limited to al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and it's morphed into associated forces. But what is an associated force? Is it somebody who has the same ideology? So, again, it is a gray area, and nobody's been able to clarify it in a way that has enough buy-in from both sides that it can go forward without this kind of controversy.
We're talking with Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Let's talk about this Associated Press report and deal in hypotheticals here. So, supposedly there is an American citizen, a member of al-Qaeda, plotting terrorist attacks from an undisclosed country, a country that prohibits the U.S. military from conducting actions on its soil. I don't know what country that is. The Associated Press hasn't indicated. What if it's Saudi Arabia? Okay, that would qualify. The U.S. is not permitted to conduct activities on Saudi soil. Actually, there was a time when we were, but not so much anymore. In that particular case, what would be the constraints of the U.S. against a place like Saudi Arabia? Would they be diplomatic because we depend so much on the Saudis, or would there be some rule of law that determines whether a drone strike goes in to Saudi Arabia, which we should point out, is next door to Yemen, where we do send drone strikes in all the time?
Well, Saudi Arabia is an ally, number one.
Right. So is Pakistan, by the way.
And Pakistan. And I think you could use either the Pakistan example or the Saudi example, if you preferred. But the real question is, what actually is being done diplomatically behind closed doors? It's one thing to say the sovereignty of the country is being ignored. It's another thing to say that the country itself cannot overtly give their approval. But they're going to – maybe they do acknowledge it. And that's one of the things the United States cannot admit to, because it harms the regimes abroad. And so that's yet another gray area. And law applies to that depending on what the actual circumstance is. And that's why the debate between the covert activities of the CIA and the more overt activities of the Pentagon get caught in the crosshairs here.
I deliberately chose Saudi Arabia because in many ways it's more provocative, more there's a lot more at stake there. Most news reports are suggesting that this undisclosed country is actually Pakistan. I'm just wondering if, given the history of drone strikes inside Pakistan and the Osama bin Laden killing in Abbottabad, if the whole Pakistan issue is like over, it's like moot. We're way beyond the issue of does anyone care if we violate the sovereignty of this ally, Pakistan, because we seem to have done it with impunity.
Yeah, and there's another piece here in the legal premise, which is that the country itself, in order for us to use a drone strike, is not able to get this individual for us, one either for capture or for kill. And that's another problem. So you make the government makes the drone strike decision against the backdrop of sort of, I don't know if it's inability or a lack of cooperation to do what the United States wants to have done in that country.
From a legal perspective, do you sense that if an American citizen does this, they're, you know, more on the radar than if just some sort of random individual does this from a nation where there might be expected to be a lot of enmity towards the United States for one reason or another, that these are easy examples to be made of?
Yeah. The American citizen issue raises the hackles of just about everybody, whether or not it should or shouldn't. It's still something to push back against. And if you can't push back there, then you certainly can't push back against the longer term. The issue of a non-American being targeted, drone striked, is that the backlash in the long run, either from the country itself or from the tribe or from the group that they associate with, could be immense and has proven to be detrimental to the United States. But when it comes to an American citizen, it sort of gets everybody's attention in a way that their attention to, unfortunately, attention to non-Americans does not happen in the same way.
It makes it more of a temptation to actually act, possibly. But quickly before we go, going back to the Mike Rogers versus President Obama sort of clips there that I played at the top of the segment, how much of this is partisanship and how much of this is an intelligent conversation about how we should proceed with national security and rule of law?
This is about I don't want to say an intelligent conversation. It's about the role of intelligence and how much can happen behind closed doors in the United States without the approval or the knowing of the American public.
Karen Greenberg is the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.